It's much appreciated once again that you joined us in the trenches with Dave Lapham, brought to you by First Star Logistics, as always, in our outstanding studios. And we've got a good friend of our show. Solomon Wilcots is always willing to step up with an opinion. Solomon Wilcots, the former Bengal player, a great player, got into the broadcasting area, a great broadcaster. He was at the Combine all week long and got some great interviews. And he was right there on ground zero, looking for stories, looking for nuggets. Solomon Wilcots is a good guy to talk about the Combine with. And we talk about the big boys. We talk about offensive line prospects. And also, we spend a good bit of time discussing Brock Bowers. Come on. Could you get Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Brock Bowers? What a trio. Come on now. That is an incredible threesome right there for Joe Burrow to throw to. Can only hope. And to hear Solomon talk about it got me more fired up. Appreciate you joining us in the trenches with Dave Lapham, brought to you by First Star Logistics. As always, we're coming to you from the studios that they provide, and they are outstanding, as is our guest, because the NFL Combine was just completed, and nobody knows more about what took place at the Combine than Solomon Wilcots, the man himself, because he was there for every minute of it, had a very, very busy Combine week. Solly, welcome, my man.
Well, Dave, hey, good to be on with you. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to talking some ball.
Sound like a plan, Coach. So what's your first take away from the Combine? I mean, what struck you as you reflect back on what you saw during the course of that week?
Man, the offensive linemen, very deep, very athletic, right? We're finding that the big guys can move. And for a long time, I've had lots of conversations with coaches around the NFL. They were saying, man, the quality of offensive linemen, many of them don't even get in a three-point stand. The way the college game has changed and the things that what we were accustomed to getting at that position and what we're getting now is just totally different. And the league has changed. The league has found a way to absorb those players who played more in a shotgun spread offense, right? Pass, very little run game. But this year's draft class of offensive linemen, I mean, these guys are big, but they can move and they're athletic. Not only did they clock well in 40 time, but in the short shuttle drills, the three cone drills, man, they can move. They can pick them up and put them down. So real deep at the quarterback position as well. I didn't know for sure we're going to get three quarterbacks taken in the first round. But you could have a few more sneak in the back end. Again, wide receivers, always a deep year for wide receivers. The proliferation, Dave, of 7-on-7 around the country, I think has made it where quarterbacks and wide receivers are able to play the game at a much higher level. Their football IQ, reading coverages, and just understanding the game so much higher than it was, say, 15, certainly 20 years ago. And so the quarterbacks and wide receivers are coming in more polished. And when it comes to supply and demand, there's a higher supply of the wide receivers. You think of someone like Amon-Ra St. Brown. He came in the same year as our Ja'Marr Chase with the Bengals.
Right.
He was a fourth round draft pick, but go look at his numbers. His numbers in terms of production are very similar to Ja'Marr Chase. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm going to take Ja'Marr Chase every year if he's there and right. Amon-Ra St. Brown is. But if you took a guy in the fourth round and your guy performed as well as mine does, and my guy was a fifth overall pick, you might say that you're making some money in terms of your return on investment. So that's how far away the disparity at the wide receiver position. You can wait really later and find yourself a really good player.
Do you think the Bengals sitting there at number 18, and of course, as a former lineman, I was mesmerized, Solly. I mean, I'm like, man, these dudes are so fluid. I mean, they are so athletic. They can bend so easily, you know, and the change of direction ability. It's like, I feel like I'm watching a guy, you know, like when I saw Anthony Munoz the first time, I'm like, he moves like a guy 120 pounds smaller. That's what these guys were doing. They were moving, changing direction like a, you know, somebody over 100 pounds smaller from a body frame standpoint. And I'm just thinking, man, that'd be huge. If one of these guys gets down to 18, so I'm thinking, oh, quarterbacks, wide receivers, edge rushers, are there going to be a proliferation of those guys chosen? And there should be. I'm thinking, I'm looking, there's like 6, 7, 8 of them that I'd take in a heartbeat. And all of those aren't going to go before number 18. You know, I'm thinking Bengals should be in pretty good shape to get one of these guys. What do you think?
I know, man. And you know how we've been begging for upgrades to the offensive line. And I do believe they're going to have to start drafting. They're going to have to. This is not just about this year, right? What do we need for now? This is about what they're going to need when Jamar's contract and Joe Burrow's contract is eating up a large portion of the cap, and your ability to not have players on free agent deals, but have them on rookie deals, right? And so whoever you draft this year, that contract factors in. You just got to make sure that you hit on the player. And right now, I think considering where they're picking at 18, they're going to have a number of different guys stacked, whether it's a tackle,
yep,
whether it's a guard, whether it's a center, because I think they could take any one of those three positions on the offensive line. And if it means that they're like a Frank Ragnow. Remember when Frank Ragnow was coming out? We wanted him so bad. You can build around a center. You can build around a guard. Guards today, I think their value has gone up more than at any other time in our league, because these teams now are understanding you're going up against a Chris Jones, an Aaron Donald, right? A Jeffrey Simmons with the Titans. You better be strong up the middle. This is something that Paul Brown, you played for Paul, you know, this is what he always believed.
Yep.
Yeah, you need that tackle, but you better be good up the middle first. And if you had to pick your druthers, you're probably better at center and both guard positions. I know the Patriots were like this. They felt like they didn't have to be as good at the tackle because Brady was going to step up in the pocket. And as long as you had vision to step up,
yeah,
you could kind of piece together something at the tackle position. So, no, offensive linemen, to me, they're right in our wheelhouse. There's going to be a talented center guard or tackle when the Bengals go on the clock at 18. But ask me about Brock Bowers. And then we can start another conversation.
I've said, Solly, it's like if somehow he's there at 18, when you think about the trio of Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, Brock Bowers with the quarterback Joe Burrow, and, you know, it's like, all right, I mean, boy, detach him. He could play slot. He runs routes like a slot receiver. I mean, this guy's talents are freakish. I mean, do you think he'll get there at 18? I just don't see that. Do you?
Well, let me give you this. Last year, only one tight end went in the first round.
Wow, that's right. That's right.
You know where he was selected? Dalton Kincaid out of Utah. You know where he was selected? 25th overall.
Right, toward the bottom, yeah.
And the Bills moved up to get him because they wanted to get him before Dallas did. Yep. They moved up to get him. Sam, yep, LaPorta, who had the best rookie season of any tight end in the 104-year history of the game, was drafted to the Detroit Lions in the second round. George Kittle, arguably one of the best tight ends in the game, fifth-round pick out of Iowa. The best tight end in our game for sure, Travis Kelce, was a third-round pick, UC Bearcat.
Yep.
The list goes on and on. TJ Hockenson was a first round pick. He's now playing for the Vikings, but he was playing for Detroit. They must have felt like that was too rich for them, because remember, they traded him to the Vikings, right? But this league falls in love with any of the tight ends out of Iowa,
right?
And only one of them went in the first round. Gronk, second round pick out of Arizona. We can go on and on. Who are the best tight ends in our game? Who are the most recent best tight ends in our game? Not many of them were first-round picks. None of them were top 10 picks. In fact, this one was a top 10 pick, and you might call it a mistake. But you and I both know all Bengals fans were sitting there praying in 2021 when the Falcons went on the clock. Jamar Chase is sitting there, and the Bengals have the fifth overall pick, and the Falcons, use their fourth overall pick to take Kyle Pitts,
right,
the talented tight end, right, with the fourth overall pick, and you passed on Ja'Marr Chase. We said it then that was a bad decision.
Right.
Clearly a bad decision now, right? So I think you look in there, and that's why teams don't like to take tight ends in the top 10. So now you look at, okay, he could fall at 11. Well, that's where the Vikings are sitting. They just signed a tight end, TJ Hockenson, to a blockbuster deal.
Right.
You have a lot of those teams. At 15, I could see him maybe potentially going to the Indianapolis Colts. However, I'll tell you this, because the Bengals don't move up often to go get a guy.
Yeah.
If you were going to go get a guy, this is the guy to go get. To me, he's a generational player, and I think we know we have to begin to imagine a future without T. Higgins, unfortunately, because right. I love T. Higgins. But to me, you're probably going to be most difficult to find another wide receiver like T. Higgins after 2024. But if you can find a tight end to supplement his production, because you can find tight ends to produce what you're getting from T. Higgins as a numerical production standpoint, but you know the numbers, you're going to pay less for the player if he's a tight end.
Right.
Everything tells you that if you're going to replace T. Higgins, don't look to do it with a receiver. You could do it with a tight end by the name of Brock Bowers, because he'll give you maybe the 100 catches, say 90 catches, right up to about 900 yards to 1,000 yards receiving. And guess what? The tag number, if you tag the tight end, meaning the most you're going to pay for him on the per annual, is $12 million a year.
It's not 21, 22.
There you go. So that's my conversation. I know I probably took us somewhere you didn't mean to go, but
no.
I just thought we should have that conversation.
I'm 100,000% with you. If they can figure out a way to get Brock Bowers, who talked about that, Solly, and I'm in total agreement that, I mean, this kid, you watch him run routes, that's a big-bodied receiver. I mean, he runs unbelievable routes.
With speed.
Gets in and out of cuts with speed.
Yeah.
Running with the ball after the catch. Looks like a wideout. I mean, he's he's unbelievable after the catch. I mean, this guy, I agree with your assessment. I think he's a generational talent. He is special with a capital S. There's no doubt.
And he can give you snaps in line.
Yep.
He can block. He can give you. So first of all, let's back up. Here's a kid that grew up in Napa Valley, California. I'm a California kid, and I know what most people think of is they think we're soft, right? they think because we came from Cali, we're soft, Dave. What do you think happened when he showed up in Athens, Georgia? You know the program Kirby runs down there. You got to be a bad dude to step in that huddle as a true freshman, and by the time you get to the first game of the year, Kirby Smart said, oh, he start.
No doubt.
You know what he had to go through? You know the kind of battles he had to win in training camp?
All the talent? Oh, man.
With that kind of talent on that roster?
Yeah.
So they make you earn it there, and he was an All-American. He's one of only three. And All-American still means something in college football.
Right.
In fact, I think it means more than what it means to make a Pro Bowl, to be honest with you. Because you've got to be a top – you're the top player at your position. There's only one first-team All-American at tight end in the entire country, right?
Right.
Well, he's done it 3 years in a row. He's only one of three guys to do that at the University of Georgia in their illustrious history. You know the other two guys? Probably know one of them, Herschel Walker.
Yeah.
The other was former Cincinnati Bengal linebacker David Pollack.
David Pollack, how about that? Yeah.
How about that? So this guy, he's been consistently good, consistently dominant. And, you know, you go back and look at the tape, it gets even better. I mean, we were just exchanging words in terms of how we feel about him. But you go watch the tape and you see what kind of competitor he is. He's the same kind of competitor that Ja'Marr Chase is, the same kind of competitor that Joe Burrow is. Last I checked, we can use a few more of those on offense.
And what's the common denominator? SEC. High-quality college football. I mean, yeah. Bowers, he'll stick his nose in there, man. He's
That's
not bashful.
Right. That's right.
He'll fight. He'll scratch. He'll claw. That's right. Compete. I mean, it's like he's not like
bad dude.
Yeah, he's nowhere does Cowardly even show up, man? He's going after you, boy. I tell you, he's right. He'll engage everything.
Think about the division we play in. Think about the defenses we're playing against.
Right.
You're playing Baltimore. You're playing Pittsburgh.
Yep.
You're playing a Cleveland Browns team that's got a top 10 defense. In fact, rated number one across several metrics in terms of points allowed, ability to turn you over, hit your quarterback. Okay. We need some dogs on offense, because think about the three defenses we're playing up against year in and year out in the AFC North.
Yeah. Yeah. And you look at a guy like Bowers with all the talents that we just talked about, you know, now you have to make a decision defensively. Linebacker, he's much more athletic and faster. Defensive back, he's bigger. You know, I mean, it's like the matchup factor, all you're looking for all the time with all the up-tempo formations, motions, everything, is trying to get mismatches. This dude lines up and he can be a mismatch. I mean, he is a problem.
The guy's can a problem win over the middle of the field.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with Andy Reid while I was at the scouting combine. He talked about Travis Kelce allows his offense to win over the middle of the field. He talked about Rashee Rice, who was a rookie last year, a big body receiver, who allows him to win over the middle of the field. He feels like he can scheme guys open and put them in position to win outside. It's over the middle of the field where you and I both know the yards and the completions are much more difficult to come by. And if you can't be productive on the middle of the field, it becomes harder to be productive on the perimeter portions and downfield. Yep. So you have to be able to dictate to your opponent that, no, we're going to own the middle of the field. The way you do that is with your run game. The way you do it is with tight ends. The way you do it is with your slot receiver, or at least one big body guy. T. Higgins has been that, because he runs a slant and then with those inside cutting routes, as well as any wide receiver in the NFL.
Right. Man, you think about it, Solly. Bowers owning the middle of the field, Chase and Higgins on the outside. And the thing is, what the Bengals do is they're all interchangeable. They can all play X, Y, and Z. I mean, they can all move everywhere. But, I mean, just thinking the concept of that, you got the big-bodied wide receiver on the outside that's going to win contested catches and can run and run routes. You got Ja'Marr Chase, a genetic freak on the outside, and you got Bowers owning the middle. Oh, my gosh, man. Joe Burrow throwing the football to him.
And to me, when we talk about taking care of our quarterback, I agree. Offensive linemen are really the best way you take care of them.
Right.
But when you have a good tight end, that's another way to take care of them. Do not get into this monolithic way of thinking that there's only one way to take care of your quarterback. There's a diverse way of taking care of your quarterback. You go out and get him a top wide receiver. Everybody knows that's one way to take care of him. We have that. Yep. You go out and get a good offensive line. That's another way. Right? Go get him a good tight end. Why do you think when Tom Brady went to Tampa, first thing he went up there and told him, let's go get Gronk. I need Gronk. You know, if you want me to get the Super Bowl title for you, get me Gronk. And they got him Gronk. And how did that work out? It worked out beautifully. Tom was able to be who he was immediately in Tampa because he had that familiarity at the tight end position. They were going to win over the middle of the field.
Okay, so Kenny Anderson won the passing title in 1975. Bob Trumpy was his tight end. Won the passing title in 81 and 82. Dan Ross was his tight end. Case closed. You got to have somebody that is winning in the middle. I much agree with that, man. It's like when push comes to shove, I can find that guy in the middle of the football field and he's winning his matchup.
Boom. And he's a big body guy. I mean, these are easy completions for Joe Burrow. And these are, you know, when if we don't block them all, you still got a guy, right, who can win even though he's crowded. He can big body you up and play like a power forward and rebound the ball for you in tight coverage, right?
Yeah.
But he also has the speed to separate not only at the top of routes. Go and check him out now. He can create the yak. He can create yards after catch. He can create yards after contact. I saw him separating from defenders in the SEC at the third level of the defense, where it looked like they're closing in on him. He's 25 yards down the field. It's a 50-yard catch and run touchdown.
Crazy.
The dude can go now. He And he comes from an athletic family. His dad played ball. His mom played ball. His sisters are athletes. His brothers are athletes. I talked to him about competition they used to have as kids. He was like, my parents wouldn't let us win. I loved every minute of it. The chance to sit down and talk with him, because he's a very humble young man, but he's very sure that he can play this game.
So now, you know, there's everybody's taking shots on him out there, because I guess the first three answers he had at his press was, I don't know. And everybody's just ripping on the kid. I mean, it's unbelievable. You can't win for trying, you know, at the combine. They're going to try to find one thing, nitpick it, pick it till the scab breaks, and you got something that's bleeding, man.
You know what they didn't ask him, can you play? Because he would have never said, I don't know.
Right on. What? Look at the tape, the dude. All right, so let me ask you this, Solly. How much is the combine going to change with Caleb Williams saying, no medical? You know, I'll do it at the pro days. No medical. I mean, the combine, literally for most teams, you got a lot of head coaches not going already. You got GMs that didn't go already. I mean, if these guys don't take medicals and then they decide they're not going to interview for some reason, that didn't happen this year. But I mean, that's the two things, M&M, medical and meetings and interviews and stuff. And yeah, if there are no medicals at the combine, what does that make the combine, Solly?
So here, and I agree everything with what you're saying, because I think there is some nuance to it. I don't like it. I would prefer for him to work out. I would prefer for him to throw. I would prefer for him to meet with the teams, to meet with the media, and to do the physical. Here's the world that we live in today. We now know that our medical information can be used against us. We know this. This is why there are HIPAA laws, right, that prohibit anyone, including your doctors and my doctor, from giving our medical information to someone that wants it. That information is of high priority and should always be protected. So I'm not saying he has anything to hide. I could see him knowing he's going to be the first overall pick.
Right.
Same with Marvin Harrison Jr. You know you're going to be one or three. So, okay, I'll do the physical for these three teams or for this one team. But I don't necessarily feel like every team in the league needs to have my medical information. That's just, if he feels that way and that's what he were to tell me, I would have to say, wow, that's forward thinking. But I can see where I could almost agree with that. As long as the teams that needed it had it, I don't see where the teams that have no shot of getting Caleb Williams need that information, right? They have no shot of getting
it. Yeah.
And I know my medical history. I don't want it in the hands of everybody, so I get that. He should probably do the meetings for sure.
Yeah.
But you and I also know that there have been stories of teams asking the most ridiculous questions. If you were a cat or if you were an animal, who would you be?
Right.
I mean, come on. Now, look, the commissioner has been documented. The commissioner has had to come down on some teams and on coaches and their organizations saying this will not continue because we want these players to participate. But if you're going to be doing this, can't you foresee a day where if the player had an agent or family member who'd been through this experience, they're going to want their young man not to go through that experience? And this is where we are. Because Marvin Harrison, the junior, his father's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
He knows what these meetings have been like and some of the questions that have been asked because he's been through it himself. So I think we're at a place where we can want these players to do everything. Most of them will because they can improve their draft status by doing it. For the ones who are already stacked at the top of the board, they have enough leverage to say, here's what I will do. Here's what I won't do. Caleb Williams, for instance, he was there for all the drills because you get paired with guys. They're in your group. He was there with his group cheering them on the whole way.
No doubt.
Like he wasn't absent. He could have stayed in LA or he could have not even been out on the field with them. But there were some things that I saw him doing. He was supporting a local high school team that he was taking pictures with. He took the time to speak to them. By all accounts, for many of the NFL legends who were there escorting each group through to where they needed to go, they all have wonderful things to say about him as a young man. So while I would want him to do all of those things, what I won't do is I won't vilify him for not doing them. I'm going to lay out for now.
Yeah.
And hope that this doesn't continue into perpetuity. I hope we have more guys like we did. We have more guys compete. I think it helped a guy like Michael Penix Jr., who looked really good, who many of us didn't see going in the first round. He performed so well, and you know he has the body of work, right? So they kind of mirrored up. And now I think he'll be a guy that goes in the first round. So for every guy that sort of steps aside for whatever reason, it does kind of open the door for someone else to say, hey, look at me, grab the attention of the scouts and the teams, and they make good with that time.
You know, and I look at it, I mean, Caleb Williams, he's made $10 to $12 million in the NIL. I mean, that's a different dynamic coming into a combine. You're already a multimillionaire, you know? And it's like, all right, well, I'm going to control the narrative. I'm going to take the power here. I'm going to take a little control.
Yeah.
But with that said, he stayed until the very end because he had a teammate that was one of the last groups, and he wanted to see his teammate and support his teammate. And then he hung around. He was the last guy off the field. He's thanking the workers. He's thanking the NFL people that put the combine together that were on the field, you know, doing the dirty work. Yeah. So this guy's a quality guy. This guy's a leader. This guy's got a lot of personality. And so you see all sides of them. And that's obviously was an intent and goal of his to show everything. And I think, you know, I think when you weigh it out, it's like, yeah, I mean, this guy hasn't hurt himself. Let's put it that way. There's no doubt.
No, I don't think he hurt himself. I still don't believe that we know all there is to know.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm sort of really slow to pass judgment. I know this. When I look at the tape, I have some questions. I have some issues. I don't think he's a day one starter. So here's where the draft and the tape sometimes don't always mirror up. Ja'Marr Chase, his sophomore year, he had 20 touchdowns. He was playing with Justin Jefferson and Joe Burrow. He had 20 receiving touchdowns. I mean, and then he then the next year with COVID and everything, he sat out the whole year.
Right.
I'm gonna tell you right now, I had seen enough. Like, I'm gonna just tell you now, it's like I seen enough. That dude can flat out ball, man. Right. And I had seen enough. So now with a guy like Caleb Williams, who the year before he won the Heisman during the 2022 season after transferring from Oklahoma to USC.
Right. Yep.
And then this past year, he did not play nearly as well. He had 40 plus touchdown passes, single digit interceptions. I get all that. He played a lot of where everything was scramble drill. Everything was hold the ball till defense breaks down, run around, find a guy open, throw it. And he did it for an entire season. You can't win that way in the NFL. You got to throw in rhythm. You got to throw in sync. You got to read your progression, get the ball out quick. You get hurt. The longer you hold on to the ball in our league, the more chances you have of getting hurt, getting injured. The defensive player, we arrive with bad intentions. When we come to hit you, we're trying to get you out of there. I mean, we want you to live to fight another day. We're not trying to maim you, but our chances of winning go up if you end up leaving the game. So this year he held the ball a lot. And that does not transfer over to our game if that's the way you play. Remember how Joe Burrow played with it? He was at LSU. I mean, he was in sync. He was, as soon as that back foot hit the top of his drop, bam, ball's out. He can read it. He can read blitzes. He can set his own protections. That's a guy who's ready to play day one. So while Caleb Williams does have a high ceiling, he has the highest ceiling of any of the quarterbacks in this draft. I don't know that he's day one ready, but that's why I really think a lot of these teams should consider drafting and sitting. That's how you develop these guys. That's what I can go down the list of the guys who sat the first year and tell you how it worked out. And I guarantee you my list would be longer of the successful quarterbacks who were drafted high, sat the first year and then played, than anyone else's list of guys who were day one ready and hit the ground winning. That's going to be a short list, right? Yeah,
right on.
Very short list. Right on.
I mean, the most famous one, Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes, you know, and Patrick Mahomes turned out okay, you know.
That's right. How about Jordan Love?
Right, right.
How about Aaron Rodgers before him?
Right, absolutely, with Brett Favre. You know, so, I mean, the thing is with Caleb Williams, he has that Patrick Mahomes off-platform spectacular, and he kind of leans on that. You know, it's like, don't get to that point where you have to do that. When you have to do it, great, you can do it. And the other thing, man, he's got to learn to climb the pocket, not retreat. He'll try to retreat and outrun everybody. And not in the NFL, man. He ain't getting out the back door. That back door is a trap door.
I do not like to see when quarterbacks do that. It's the thing that concerns me most.
Yep.
And if you go back and look at the tape of the Super Bowl, the one the Chiefs lost to Tampa Bay, that's what Mahomes was doing all day. And so even though Mahomes had already been an MVP, had already had a 5,000-yard season, it showed you that he had yet to evolve and develop into the quarterback that he is now. Because now he climbs the pocket. He understands that drifting back only gets you in more trouble. You can drift back so far that you have to throw a 20-yard pass just to get it back to the line of scrimmage.
Right.
and we've seen that. So it's something that young quarterbacks have to learn it. For whatever reasons, they should have been taught that in college. At least that's just – I remember college football. There are some good coaches at the collegiate level. Should have been taught that. But sometimes they let kids get away with what works. And if it works, they let you just keep doing it. And then you come here and think you can do it, find out you can't, and now your confidence is shaken. You're getting beat up. You're getting hit. And now let's see if they can learn the lesson while playing their way out of it. If they have to sit and develop, they don't have to take the beating while learning.
Solly, as always, man, this was awesome, man. I mean, I could talk to you for hours. You're the best, man. And it's incredible. It really is. I love talking football with you. And now it's going to be, all right, the Super Bowl is done, the combine. Now you got free agency, and here's the draft. It's boom, boom, boom. You know how it is in the NFL, man. It keeps coming in waves.
Sure does, man. It's a great thing to be part of because we get to see growth and development of young people before our eyes. We get to see what teamwork really does. You know, we've always said it. You were coached the right way. So was I. And I think Joe Namath said that football convinced him that life is a team game. It is. No one can do anything of themselves, by themselves, for themselves. That there was always some teacher there helping you along the way, right? Some parent there helping you along the way, instilling confidence in you. A good sibling or a good friend helped you along the way. You just can't do it by yourself. Our game is that in spades. The best teams win, not the best players. And so that's what keeps us going every day, Dave. We love watching it all come together. This is the time of year where it all comes together.
And, Solly, with that, I'm going to mention something that Tiger Johnson told me as a rookie. He said, young blood, never, ever waste an opportunity to get better. I mean, I don't care if it's every practice, every snap at practice, every opportunity you have, young man, make yourself better. And Tiger was right on, wasn't he?
Tiger was the best, man. He was. I miss him.
I hear you. I hear you. Solly, you're the best. You're the best. Appreciate you. And we'll catch up some more here. We got other things to discuss. Free agency, draft coming up, and there's nobody better to discuss it with than my man, Solomon Wilcox. Not only a great player, a great broadcaster, and an incredible human being, my man, Solomon Wilcox.
Thanks, Dave. Let's do it again soon.
You're the best. Thank you.
Bye.
Dave Lapham here, and every day I am grateful for my experience to have played professional football. As a player, I realize self-motivation, leadership, and appreciating your teammates are key. At First Star Logistics, you can use those same attributes to create the life you want for you and your family. Build your future by working hard, like I did. You'll see results both on and off the field. Call First Star Logistics today and be part of our winning team. Opportunity knocking.